Fall in.
Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a boat, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind. In your heart, gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when I am on the air.
Hi, everyone. This is MJ Network. This is your host, Fran Lewis. And we're going to be speaking about a phenomenal novel that just came out yesterday, Read and Gone by Alison Brooksaw, a.k.a. we'll tell you who it is. But this book is really great, and it's the second book in the Haunted Library Mystery Series, and the author is here. Hi, good morning. How are you?
Hi, Fran. I'm happy to be here.
I'm glad you're here, too. It's been an interesting week, what can I say? So
yes.
We're so glad that the sun is almost out, not quite. Not quite, and Florence is coming here on Tuesday and Wednesday, and she really needs to stay away. But
yeah.
Hopefully the damage won't be bad, but Read and Gone is the second book in your library mystery series, so tell everybody a little bit about Carrie and her role in the library and Sally.
Uh-huh. Well, Carrie Singleton came back to Clover Ridge, Connecticut, where her father's family had a farm, and now her great aunt and uncle live on the green. The green is a very important part of the town because there are all kinds of there are old homes built around the green, and many of them are now stores, shops, and galleries, and the library is there as well. And Carrie came back because she's been kind of wandering since college. She's almost 30 years old at the start of the first book. And she's been staying in places a year here and there. And her uncle, who's on the library board, he's a great uncle, actually, Bosco, he gets her a job in the library, but it's just as a filler in. And she's not very happy because what she's doing is reshelving books mostly. And in Death Overdue, she's offered the position of head of programs and events. Her background is library, and she has a degree, and of course there's a murder, and an old murder and a new, and she has a nemesis, the reference librarian. She also finds a kitten, a half-grown kitten, near her cottage, which she rents from a mysterious man who turns out he ends up being her boyfriend. And in the second book, she brings Smokey Joe, that's what she names the cat, to the library every day, and he becomes the library cat. And in the second book, things are going quite well for Carrie. She feels for the first time that she belongs someplace. She's had rather a very dysfunctional family life. Her father is a thief. And even when he's not in prison, he's pretty much stayed away from the family. Her parents get divorced, and her mother remarries a younger man who is sort of an actor. He gets bit parts in Hollywood, and her mother's not very maternal, and her father's been absentee until the morning after her birthday homewarming party. He suddenly appears at 3 a.m. and he breaks in, and he wants Carrie to set up an appointment with the local jeweler, who happens to be his partner in a heist that they both pulled. And the jeweler has the entire heist, the entire amount of jewels that they've taken. And Jim Singleton wants his share. And, of course, Carrie says no, and he takes off. And the next thing she knows is that the jeweler is dead, and her father's suspect number one.
All I know is that my favorite presentation before the jeweler was dead was the gems and jewels.
Mm. Oh, yes. He does. Carrie had.
I love that.
Oh, yes. Now you know how to tell a diamond from a fake.
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, yes. There are different tests, and that was a lot of fun to do that research. Oddly enough, my father was a jeweler on Canal Street, yes. And I had no interest in jewelry when I was growing up.
Mm.
I remember I was a child, and this was the time that Canal Street had the L built over it, and there were drunks sitting around Canal Street, leaning against the walls. And my parents, my mother worked on Saturday, and once in a while I would go down there because that's where I had my eyes examined and would get glasses. And they would send me to the next exchange and with some sort of, with gems in a little paper bag. And everything was done on memo. And I used to worry about the drunks. But my mother, who worried about everything, said, oh, don't worry, don't worry. They won't bother you. And they didn't. And they didn't. So it was interesting because you never know where you get your ideas to come, where your ideas come from. So it was interesting that my father was a jeweler.
Well, my mother was really great at jewelry, so I learned jewelry 101. And used to aggravate my sister because my sister would say to me, how come you go to flea markets and you always pick out the good stuff and I don't? I said, that's because I've got the eye and you don't. What can I say?
Uh-huh.
But
did you bring the loop with
yeah.
you to check it out?
Yep.
Uh-huh. Well, I must say I've changed my opinion about jewelry. I've gotten to like it very much. And But I remember when I went back to college, I gave my father pieces back that I never wore, that I was not interested in. But we do change over time, don't we?
I don't know. I'm still. They're telling me I'm more of a juvenile delinquent than I was back then, which is really
good. Oh.
And I just do things my way. That's because I have red, green, purple, orange, and blue streaks in my hair with my blonde. It's me. And it matches my leggings.
Oh, how interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to be different. So who fought with Benton and why? And why didn't they like him? Oh, poor man.
Well, he's not a very likable person. He's
I know,
a phony.
But he had all that jewelry to make me happy.
Oh, well, then maybe you could be his next girlfriend. Oh, sorry, he's dead. Yes. Well, he did give this lecture. He came to the library with his assistant and his daughter. And he's different from Jim Singleton in that he's a thief, but he's a phony. And he pretends to be a pillar of the community when he isn't, where Jim has no pretenses of the sort. But Jim has a good heart, better than the jeweler does, I would say.
That's true. Yeah. Where's my pay? Oh, we have Jennifer Darby.
Oh, yes, his girlfriend.
I wasn't sure about her. And her husband, Paul. And what was her link to Benton? I I'm very suspicious, you know me. That's my character because, after all, Fran has read over who knows how many books. So
that's right.
After, well, it's too many. I'm reading six inside right now. I don't even know. I just thought, I started them because I get bored. I have to read different.
Uh-huh.
So what was her connection
Jennifer,
to Benton?
Jennifer is a young woman who actually works in the cafe in the library. And we find out that she's been having an affair with Benton, only she doesn't consider it an affair. She considers it a true affair of the heart, and she says they're planning to run away. I suppose that's what the money for the heist is for and why he doesn't want to share it with his partner. You know, there's no honor among thieves. And her husband, whom she loved very much, is her old sweetheart, and she still has some feelings for him, but he's lost his job, and as a result, it's had a very bad effect on him. So that factors too, I'm sure, in her coming, you know, getting involved with another man, because her husband's been having all kinds of problems. So she is a potential suspect, of course. She murdered him, as well as Benton's wife, and who is a very hypocritical kind of a fancy woman. She sets herself up as a very prim and proper person, but she isn't very nice when you get to know her.
That's very true. There were a bunch of characters in this book that were not very nice. So you, the reader, better read the book to find out who really isn't nice. I'm not going to tell you. Nope. Mm-mm. I posted my five stars yesterday.
There are some nice people. Excuse me?
And then there's Carrie. She's nice. And then
she's
my
nice.
Favorite character is Grandma, is Evelyn. I'm sorry. I love
Evelyn.
The ghost.
Yeah. Well, Evelyn is the ghost.
I love
her. Yes. She, I would say, is in her mid-60s. And she dresses differently every time she appears, and Carrie wonders where she keeps her clothes. She often gives Carrie advice, and she sometimes gives Carrie help. She doesn't always help Carrie because she often has her own agenda, and she often has she's reluctant to give information for fear that it will reflect badly on her. So she isn't always as forthcoming, as she's not always the helpful ghost that people might think or might want her to be. And then, of course, there's her niece, Dorothy, who works in the library and isn't very pleasant. Dorothy is the reference librarian, and she wanted the job of head of programs and events, the job that Carrie was given. And in the first book, she pulls many tricks, and some of them are nasty. And Carrie calls her to account. Carrie does not let her push her around. But, you know, it's a very – let me put it this way. They're not friends, and she's not an easy person to be around. Not many people like Dorothy, except that Evelyn is very fond of her niece. But at the same time, she knows what Dorothy's personality is all about, and she's, in a way, ashamed of her as well. So this is why Evelyn is sometimes secretive.
I don't like Dorothy either.
No.
Well, but you need characters in the book that are mean. Because everything is so perfect, you know, I would say, like, oh, God, put me to sleep again. And I've read books where they're too perfect, and I go, like, why are you putting me through this torture? Seriously.
That's so interesting because today there was a review and somebody said something about not – some of the characters not being nice. But I think that Carrie certainly has enough nice people at her side. There's her great aunt and uncle. They're very loving. Her friend Angela, who's very spirited, the reference, she works at Circulation, Sally, and John, who's the police lieutenant, and her boyfriend is a nice guy, and so is her father when you get to know him. I do too. He's really very sorry that he didn't spend more time with Carrie and her brother growing up. Carrie's brother died as a young adult. He was in a car accident, and of course she misses him. And when she comes to live in the town where she's now working, she's finally settling down for the first time in her life. She finally has a place she can call home. So, I mean, unfortunately, Dylan, her boyfriend, is away a good part of the time because he investigates stolen artwork and gems. and he's away on cases, and he works out of Atlanta. But there's a possibility that he'll be settling down closer to Clover Ridge.
That would be nice, but we're going to talk. We have to talk about the fact that she gets angry with him. But he killed
Benson.
Oh, we could do that. Yeah, I know. And you know what? Everybody, whoever wrote that review and said characters, you know, it's not nice. Characters have flaws, and if everybody's nice and perfect, no one's going to have a murder. No one's going to care who committed it, and no one's going to have any suspicion. And to be after someone like myself reading a million books, I would be bored to tears and say, like, oh my God, how could you do that? So
that's right.
If there aren't
where would be the conflict?
Yeah, and where would be the villain? I mean, seriously, people, where are you? And it's so much easier to kill up. And we're gonna talk about part of that on December 10th when you're part of that panel. We got Colin Eggers that day too, by the way. Got a whole bunch
of
people. Yes,
that's
she loved
very
the topic.
Nice.
Yeah, Colin Eggers, Alan Topol, you, Marcia Casper Cook, and Dick Belsky, New York Times author Dick Belsky that writes for the NBC News.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got
that's
we're
wonderful.
Talk about,
yeah,
how you create your characters, how you pick their vocation, how you pick their flaws, and all sorts of stuff like that. And I'm also adding, how do you pick the title of the book? So I'm
well, Red,
yeah,
I did not pick this title, Red and Gone, because I had something else, and my editor picked it. So I may pick a title, but then someone else picks another title. So such as that. That's how it goes.
You should let me tell them what I think. What could I tell you?
Well, I like the title. I like Death Overdue. And I can't even remember what Red and Gone was now. But I just finished the third book. And let me see if they keep this title or not. So I'll have to see about that.
I know. A lot of the authors have been telling me the same thing. So I'll say to them, did you get anything? A lot of times they pick the blurb on the back cover, and it gives – a couple of times I even called, you know, emailed publicists and said, you know, from this blurb on the back cover, I could tell you who did it.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
When I remember I used to write when my children's books, they were novels, would come out, I had to change the flap copy for that reason. They gave the editor who wrote it gave away the story, which is not what you want any kind of flap copy or a blurb. You want the suspense to remain there for the reader's enjoyment. You want them to find it on their own, not to be given away. So I think it's enough to introduce a book, you know, the setting and the problems surrounding it in the beginning, and that's it. You know, from there, if they like the reading, if they like the way it reads, fine, they will read it. If not, you know, I think you could tell right away if you like the way an author writes. And don't you think?
That's another... Yeah, that's another topic that I'm going to do probably in January. I have all these panel shows in my brain. It's how do you start your novel so that someone doesn't say, I don't want to read it. And, you know, knowing me, I don't read the flap. I'll look at, you know, the title of the book, and I'll look at the cover art and see if it matches what the title's about, maybe. And then I'll read, like, the first paragraph or two. And if the first
those
paragraph...
Are two things. Those are two things that the author may have nothing to do with.
Yeah, I know.
The title.
And the only person, the only author that I've ever interviewed, and I don't know if she's doing any more interviews, is Iris Johansson. And Iris said when she wants something done on the cover, they don't even think to say no. She is the only one that has cover art and flap art. And she was the one who had to call her publicist and say they gave away the thing on the flap and Amazon had the wrong characters in the book. They had to change the blurb on Amazon. And
oh,
I was the only
God.
One that caught it. Oh, my God. She said, I said to her, I'll take care of it. I'll call, you know, your publicist myself. And I said, how could you let this go? I said, I have the wrong characters, the wrong book, under the wrong title. And he said, you got to be kidding me. I said, I'm the only one that picked it up. Then
but how
I
could her publisher do that, let it go?
I don't
mean,
know. They messed up, and she was not, you don't mess with Iris is fantastic to interview as long as you stay off the topic of what the book is about, basically.
Well,
so we've
got, that's
the truth, right?
Well, I was just thinking of my covers. I guess I always have apprehension when I first saw Death Overdue, you know, and I, because it's, if you look at my covers, you'd think I focused on holidays, because Death Overdue has scary pumpkins on it, a phenomenal cover, and they were right. I can't tell you how much people love that cover. And then the second one was A Christmas Tree, and it's not a Christmas story, although it does take place the last 2 weeks in December, and it does have a lot to do with the season, but I see I had nothing to fear, because they know what they're doing when it comes to my publishing house and covers. And readers have told me how much they love my covers, so I'm very happy. Oh, thank you. They're colorful. The cat's always in it. And it is fun. It didn't, I had no input into it, but I see, you know, they do know their business. Anyway, that was nice to know that, you know, I like my covers. I find covers in general, I've been enjoying covers in general. I love to look at book covers, and it's amazing how varied they can be given how many books they're out and that are out. And I'm talking about mystery and cozy covers, which is what I'm writing these days. And I love so many of them. I'm glad to see that there's so much variety. So,
well, I was honored yesterday, but Cindy McDonald's new book, Mambo, about the Mambo's dancing, and she sent it to me to see what I thought. Oh, my God, is it adorable. Well, her Fiona Quinn series is a riot. And she's going to finally come on my radio show. She's going to brave it in December. I said, don't worry, it's going to be fine. I love her books, and I love your books, because the print is large, people. And when I get a book with small print, I just put it on the side and say, I'll get to you someday. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
With a magnifying glass.
No, it doesn't help. I gotta see it.
Doesn't help.
So,
no,
we've got Angela, Trish, and Susan, and, of course, the wicked Dorothy. So Angela, Trish, and Susan come to, you know, Harry's aid all the time. How come she got so friendly with them? And you see, people, they're nice.
Yes, they are. Well, we have to explain. Angela, of course, is her best friend, is Carrie's best friend, and she works the circulation desk, and she has a boyfriend named Steve. And Trish and Susan are part-time workers who work for Carrie. They're never there together. And When the book begins, when Death Overdue begins, Trish is very, very efficient, and she knows the people in town, and she's very helpful. And Susan seemed to be like a dim light bulb until Carrie discovered what she was very good at, and that was more hands-on, crafty kind of stuff, and she just shines in that area. And Susan is, you know, now, of course, much more, does much better. She's appreciated much more. So Carrie is able to find out what people do best and get them to help her that way. Oh, and she also was friendly with the children's librarian, Marion.
Yeah.
One of the comments that I've had, a criticism, was there are too many librarians. I live on Long Island, and this is what I see. I don't feel that my books have too many librarians, number one. And number two, all of the kind of events and programs that Carrie does, we have on Long Island. Don't you have this in your library where you are? Do you
have
these activities?
But you know what? They won't do what you do, what your library does, because my last book, A Daughter's Promise, was not self-published. It was published by Edit Prose, a small publishing house. That's fantastic. And they said because I didn't have a review on Library Journal, they wouldn't put the book in the library.
Oh.
And I was
oh.
kind of insulted. Yeah,
yeah.
I was insulted
oh.
because
yeah.
everyone that's read it is great, because tomorrow, I may as well just brag a little, I never do. Tomorrow morning at 9:30, I'm going to be interviewed on 1270 AM, 98.1 FM.
Wow, that is wonderful,
mic.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah, that
holy
is...
moly, yeah. And I don't even
yeah.
know what they're going to ask. I have no clue whatsoever, but it's about
You'll be
my
prepared.
Mom's book.
Yeah.
My book is on my thing over there, and I'm not worried.
I was referring to the fact that we have cooking classes in my library. We have all kinds
they don't
of
have
programs.
That.
In fact, Saturday we have a book fair, but that's like one fraction. They're having an autumn fair for the kids.
Nice.
They have rides. They have all kinds of the food. I mean, you think it's a regular. A regular fair that's going on the grounds of the library. They have characters dressed up, a man on stilts. I mean, they have all kinds of things for the kids and for people, and food and foods available. And I mean, it's quite amazing what we have. Another thing we have is in the summertime. This is just for the adults. We have, you're supposed to read 5 books and write a little report. You could just send it in through the internet. And then those people who do their 5 books, we have an ice cream party. And my friends and
oh,
I
nice.
Look forward to this. Oh, my God, they serve us huge trays of about 10 different flavors. Oh, and they keep replenishing them. And then on the other table are all the toppings. It's like something you could dream about. And we're giving away little toys and little tchotchkes. But we also get a book. And this time we got usually very interesting books. And the author comes and speaks and talks about her book. And people get a chance to get it autographed if they like. And, I mean, I think this is just wonderful. Now, whether other libraries do this, I don't know. But this is what my library does. Which, oh, I might add, it was voted the most popular library on Long Island. It does service a very large area. So I know it's not the wealthiest library on Long Island, and I know other libraries do a lot of things as well. And this is where I get my ideas for what Carrie can do with the kind of programs she can offer to her patrons in Clover Ridge, Connecticut. So I have a lot of fun with that too.
That's great, because up here they're very different. And
what is
they
it like
have,
there?
They do have events. They do have events. I've gone over to the head librarian. I even showed her the book and everything, and she was very nice and everything. But you know, it's a book about my mom's life, you know, with Alzheimer's, and everybody that's read it loved it. I've got no criticism except from one person that said, oh, I didn't understand what you wrote. Excuse me, how could you not understand what I wrote? And I said, that's okay, because everybody's not going to like everything.
I think not everyone's going to get an author. It's not
yeah.
not only liking, it's getting. It's getting.
They didn't get what I was saying, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. I think that's life, though. I think I've checked out Amazon ratings of some very, very well-known writers. And sure enough, you'll see 1 stars. In other words, no one is loved by everyone. You know what I mean? There's always a few people who aren't going to like a particular book or what have you. And I think we have to understand that. We have to accept that. Because as one friend tells me, that's why we have all different flavors of ice cream. She says, everyone doesn't like vanilla. And she's right. I like chocolate. So
I agree with you. It's just that when you get a review from a reader, and they write a review, you know, with the characters saying that what they actually read the book. What I don't like is when Amazon allows them to put, I don't understand what the book is about. I really hated it, so I didn't read it. That's not a review. That's somebody's ridiculous opinion. So,
exactly.
And I called them and I said, if it's someone's opinion, then put it somewhere else. Or just realize that they didn't read the book. But we've got a character that I like, and that's John Mathers. And how come Carrie, you know, butts into his investigation? Why does he let her do that? I mean, most police officers would say, you know, like, she's a Jessica Fletcher, though, this one, seriously. Or
well,
Hedy Winthrop or something.
Yeah, well, John, first of all, John is, he's become fond of Carrie. He's a very good friend of her uncle's. And when Carrie first meets him in Death Overdue, he is very stern with her and very, and, you know, but he's seen her, that she, he know that she knows what she's do. Well, that she knows what she's doing, and first of all, the she's able to get information that he cannot. So he's learned to appreciate that, and he also over the books he forms a friendship with Dylan. I mean, they're sort of in the same profession, law abiding, law establishing the law. And so he kind of looks out for Carrie. He doesn't want her to get hurt or, you know, anything to happen to her. But he knows that, in a way, that he cannot stop her. I mean, especially where so much is going on in the library where she works. So he's learned to just listen to what she has to offer. And he's always admonishing her and advising her not to get into trouble. So I think in so many books, there's an adversary role between the amateur sleuth and the police person. And there needn't be. There needn't be, at least not in every single series, don't you think? I mean, it gets boring,
oh,
as
without
you say.
A doubt.
Yeah.
But, yeah, because if you don't have an adversary, what's the point of having a murder mystery? And you've got to pick an adversary that you really hate at times.
Well, like Dorothy.
Because Dorothy needs an attitude adjustment, or she needs to work someplace else. Maybe she could work in a prison or something, and you know, help out as a warden, because she probably would do a very great job. Or
but she is,
you know,
she is a very good reference librarian.
Yeah, she is. But
she
knows her job, but she's not nice.
No, she isn't. She feels that's not part. She feels she doesn't have to be nice in addition to helping people. So, but anyway, there's quite a bit about Dorothy in the third book that I just finished the other day, and I've just begun to edit and go over. So, anyway, this is very interesting. There's much more. There were a few complaints that there wasn't enough of Evelyn in book number two, but there's plenty of Evelyn in book number three. So I find also that, I mean, there are so many characters, you can't give them all equal attention. I mean, the book would be 700 pages. Smokey Joe has a very big part in the second book. And and so do certain people. So, in other words, I feel, you know, you have to decide which characters need the most attention and which add the most to the suspense and the story as it's unfolding.
Yeah, well, if Evelyn has too much, it doesn't seem real also. But the cat is one of my favorite people, too. So we've got these gems, and everybody wants them. Why does everybody want these stones? I mean, you know, real is good. Fake is not. And what can I say? So, and this puts a strain on Dylan and Carrie's relationship.
Well,
how
yes,
come?
Because Carrie finds out that Dylan was investigating the heist, and she interprets this in a very negative way. I suppose it's a reflection on her unhappy childhood, thinking the worst and thinking, how could someone love me for me? And she thinks that Dylan got to go out with her to get to gather information about her father. And she's horrified when she realizes that Dylan was investigating this particular heist with her father as a suspect. So she just, you know, she breaks up with him. And then again, when she finds out something else about the case, you know, she just doesn't trust him. So for a while, things are very rocky between them. I also like to remind you that she met Dylan when she was a very little girl, but she doesn't she barely remembers him because she and her brother used to come to the farm when they were little, and her and Dylan and her brother Jordan were friends. Again, this is many, many years ago, and only when she was a little girl. So there's, but there are all these connections, as I think there always are in life. You know, we have different connections with different people. And like if you move to a new town, let's say, not too far from your old one, suddenly you meet people who know a friend of yours, or you know, and there are all kinds of connections, right? So,
yes, there is.
And this is kind of what this town is like. You know, she had roots there, even though she was only there in the summertime. But her father's father lived there, and her great uncle and great aunt lived there, and they're really they give her a sense of family, her aunt and uncle, and a sense of belonging. And they have no children. Oh, and then there's her little cousin. She has a cousin who used to tease her, remember, when she was young. And his daughter, Tacy, is the only other person. She's only 4 years old who can see Evelyn.
She sees Evelyn.
Yeah. So, and her mother is worried about Tacy because she's concerned that she has an imaginary friend. And but Tacy, and then Santa Claus comes, and but Tacy knows he's not real. It's really Uncle Bosco. She says Santa Claus is make believe, so she knows the difference. A little 4-year-old girl, you know. So I enjoy having the little children in the book as well. You know, they only play a small part, but it's just fun to have them there because it's real life. You know, little children are part of our lives. So
this is true, and I would love to have Evelyn help me sometimes. Seriously. So we have Dina and Chris, and Carrie teams up with Dina. Why?
Well, Dina is the jeweler's daughter. And at this point, Carrie wants to find the jewels. Now, why does Carrie want to find them? Carrie wants to find them so her father can't.
Yeah.
She wants to find them before her father can. So she doesn't want to see him go back to jail. And she wants to return them to their rightful owners. You know, she would just hand them over to Dylan. He knows who they belong to. But Dina is the jeweler's daughter, and she wants the jewels because now she's living with her mother, and her mother has all kinds of conditions. Her mother is a very controlling woman, and Dina would love to have her own jewelry store, and she sees the jewels as a source of having a free life, doing what you want, finishing college. In other words, people see these jewels as winning the lottery. They see it as a way out of their present-day life. And so that's why so many people want these jewels. Carrie only wants to get them so that her father can't get them. She just wants to put an end to this. Therefore, Carrie pretends to be in cahoots with Dina, and that because Carrie intends to return them to their rightful owners, Dina wants them for herself. But Carrie figures maybe Dina's the murderer. Maybe she wants to find out, number one, who the murderer is, and number two, she wants to get these jewels to return them.
Well, before I forget, this is in front of me. On Monday, we have New York Times author Gary Basnett. We have Flight of the Fox. And on Thursday, we have the head writer of Murder, She Wrote, Tom Sawyer, with a major production. And on September 25th, no less than ending September with the one and only Nancy Allen, Juror Number 3, that she wrote with James Patterson. And she's going to talk about how her part. Yeah, I met Nancy at the Philofest, and she's a riot. And I have an autographed copy, and I intend to email her publicist because they were supposed to send me an autographed copy from James Patterson just so I could prove I got it. And on October 2nd, the people that created my opening, Chinny House Entertainment.inc, is going to do, we're going to talk about their inspirational music that makes me feel good when I want to smile. On the 4th, I'm going to do something with Trish Stevens, October 4th. She has multiple sclerosis, and we're going to talk about it up close and personal. On the 8th, New York Times author Shannon Kirk, we're going to talk about In the Vines. And on the 10th, this is going to be a riot, Charles Salzberg, Tim O'Mara, and Ross Klavan, Three Strikes, their short stories. And that's just some of October. There's plenty more to come. And on November 14th, I would be remiss if I didn't say it, the one and only, and I'm the only one that got the exclusive interview so far, and I have to watch the movie, Island Zero, Tess Gerrinson. Seriously.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she emailed me. She said, would you like to do this? I said, first I have to brave it and watch the movie because it's scary. So
what is the name of the movie?
Island Zero. And I have to actually watch it on my computer. I have to email her and see if she's going to send me the movie itself. But all I know is that it's scary. I mean, it's scarier than Jaws.
Oh, she's such a wonderful writer, yeah.
She's a great person.
Oh,
so
I was just at BoucherCon this past weekend, and that was quite an experience.
Nice.
It was huge, many, many, many authors, all, you know, mystery writers and panels,
nice.
Wonderful panels. And, yeah, I had my panel was on, was paranormal. And,
nice.
Yeah, it was fun. And it was in St. Petersburg, which is a town that I'm familiar with.
Oh, you went to
so
Boucheron with my people, with my authors.
Yeah.
I know all of them. I know Dick Belsky and Matt Quayle. I've interviewed them. I know them in person. And I know Bruce Claflin and Dick Daniel Palmer, all of them. Well, that must have been exciting.
Daniel Palmer, I heard him, yes. He was on a panel. The panels were wonderful. They really were. And
yeah,
And my publisher and publicist, the publicist from my publisher, they took me out for lunch, which was really a delight, and we had really fun lunch, and it was just very nice, and it took a while to get used to because I'm more used to Malice Domestic, which is really for fans and writers of cozy and traditional books, which is what I write. And this was, it was like going from, if you're used to a small college and you're going to an enormous, enormous university. And we were not all in the same hotels, which I didn't like, and because it was so hot getting around. And then the first night, I was so punchy from my early flight, and I got on this little nickel ride. It's sort of a taxi, and anyway, to make a long story short, I ended up in the wrong hotel. I mean, I went all the way up to the 14th floor, and why is my key not working? And I went to the Hilton instead of the Hyatt. Well, it was partially somebody else's fault because he said, "Oh, you're in the same hotel we are." And I thought it looked nicer. Anyway, the opening, my room was beautiful at the Hyatt place. But I called the fellow who from the nickel ride, and he was very sweet. He said, "I thought you said the Hyatt place," and he took me there, and it was lovely. So you know, it was everything was fine. And then I got more acclimated as the weekend went on. So that was nice. But I do like the smaller conferences better. You know, everyone has his and her preference. So that was that. So
you would love the mystery. I get invited every year to the Grand Hyatt in Manhattan.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's there, and I don't have – the only thing I have to pay for is maybe one night. That's it, because they pay for me to go. And that's the, you know, they said that's the least we could do, because you do the book reviews for free and the shows for free. But,
Thriller
Fest,
which one
I get
this?
Invited. The Thriller Fest that's run by Kimberly Howe.
Thriller Fest, yeah.
And, yeah, and I got to meet George Martin for 5 minutes, and that was interesting. But everybody was there, and they greeted me like, you know, it was really nice, and I had a long talk. I was impressed because Catherine Coulter came over to say hi to me.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, she remembered me, and I said, oh, that's great. And a lot of people, when Dick Belsky walked over and gave me a hug, or Bobby Sigoni and all of them, it was like, she's here. I go, yes, your favorite person has arrived. What can I say? But,
well,
you know, not everybody
friend,
is wonderful.
You are wonderful. I can't believe how many books you read and review, and you do such a wonderful job of it too. It's you are the fastest reader I know. I don't know how you read all these books.
It's my mother's fault. Seriously.
Oh,
then I have a few more questions before we end. My mother made me read 10 books a week. And I can still do it when my eyes don't bother me, and she made me take notes.
Really?
So by the time the teacher said, oh, yeah, by the time the teacher said, you have a book report, it was no contest. It was fine. And then in 2003, she got diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and I weighed like 100 and nothing. I weighed almost 200 pounds because I had to take care of my mom, and I was just eating myself up to whatever. And my sister looked at me, and she said, why don't you review a book? I said, what are you crazy? Are you out of your mind? What do I know? So Martha Cheeves sent me Stir, Laugh, and Repeat a little bit while later, and I don't cook. I don't know what an oven does. So I wrote a review, and it was so funny that everybody read it. And after that, Yvonne Mason, who's on Facebook, had me reviewing her books, and all of a sudden I said, oh, you know what? I'm going to ask Tess Gerritsen if I can review her book. And somebody gave me an hour on their radio station. I don't know if she's even around. April Robbins had Red River, and Red River is on there, but Delaney took it over, and she gave me an hour for my children's books and to interview authors. And then finally I decided, after being on too many networks, I would have MJ Network after my sister. And, yeah, I've been doing this ever since. So
oh, so that's how you got, yeah. Oh,
into radio.
And
April said to me, you can try. I had no idea what I was doing. I just made it up as I was going
and
along.
Book, and you're with Martha on book, oh, what is it again? I'm on it too. Book, what is it? She just interviewed. She just did a review with it. Yeah, Book World.
Oh, Booktown.
Booktown.
Yeah.
Booktown, USA.
I review all the authors. They should give me my own page too, because I put everything on Booktown, and I've reviewed quite a number of the books on Booktown, but that's okay.
I know you have.
I have enough people that want, oh, my God, I get them from everywhere. One of the scenes that we have to talk about, because we have about 10 minutes, is that when she conducts, you see, I'm a music major. So when she conducted the musical group, it hit home. It was beautiful. Why was she so nervous?
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I love
that. You know,
and poor Dorothy. Why did she get Dorothy as a secret Santa? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what happens when know Sally. Sally is the director of the library. And Sammy, my cat just bit me. He wants me to feed him for a change. He's already eaten twice today. Sally was very resistant, really, to having Carrie take the place that she did, the position that she did. Uncle Bosco kind of encouraged her to give her the job, and actually she was qualified for it, and Dorothy wasn't. Sally was friendly with Dorothy at one point, but then you find out in a later book that Dorothy had something over Sally and tried to wield her power in that way, but Sally wouldn't do it. And Sally becomes Carrie's supporter. She sees that she's a hard worker, and they do become friends. And she gives her the secret Santa because nobody. She knows that Carrie could handle it. And nobody else really can. Nobody wants to have anything to do with Dorothy. So that's what the story on that. And Carrie is so afraid of giving her the wrong gift, you know. So she comes up with something that she finds that she does like, that Dorothy does like. And and then of course, and what do you think about the old man in the nursing home? The story, did you remember that?
Yeah.
She goes and visits Evelyn's old friend who's now in the nursing home.
Yes, she does.
Yeah.
That was touching. You know, the title of my book is A Daughter's Promise, and the promise was never to put my mom in a nursing home. And
right.
I visited.
I remember you wrote that. Yes.
I visited about 30 nursing homes. Long story.
I know.
And
yes.
When I came back, I was shaking. The hospital where she was at wanted to try. As a matter of fact, I walked in one day, and this lady comes up to me, and her name was Kathy, and she said, just sign on the dotted line, and we'll take your mother. I said, where are you taking my mother? To a party? She says, no, we're going to take her to this nursing home. I said, not as long as I'm the executor of her will or power of attorney, you're not. My mom is not going anywhere except home when she's done. I sat in a meeting of 25 people from the hospital, administrators and everything, and I made one little phone call, and I said, you're not dealing with just anybody. You're dealing with me. This is my mother, and I am the one that's paying $6,000 a month from my that I didn't even have. I depleted my checking account and everything and my charge cards because I only had 12 hours of Medicaid. Of course, later on, I won the rest of it in a very interesting way, but and my sister and my brother could only help me so much, but not at all. So I did.
It's very difficult. I know.
It's very difficult, but
it.
If I had to do it again, I would do it the same way because I found that her life was better. I had home health aides that they wished me happy birthday on Sunday, all of them. And they texted me, we love you, happy birthday, we miss you. I go, anytime you want to come up here for lunch, just let me know. I'll meet you at the bakery. And, they were part of my life. So I went into hock, but you know what? My mother, when she died and she looked at me and she said, no more, I said, what do you mean no more? Are you not going to drive me crazy for the next 20 years? But that's a whole other story. So before we end, one of my favorite scenes, of course, is Jennifer was leaving town, and when the murder is solved, and now that Jim is in her life, does Carrie want him to stay there? Because I like him. And when he goes, she's like sort of sad that he just sort of disappears again into the woodwork.
Who is this? Oh, Jim. Oh, no,
Jim.
No, he comes back. Oh, no, he has a job. He's now working for Dylan's company.
Dylan, right. So he's going to come back in the next one? Oh, he's got
no,
it because
well,
I love this
he,
guy.
Yeah, I
Not
do
really.
Too, because he's really a sweet man, and he realizes that, but I mean, you could understand how Carrie, she calls him Jim, and he wants her to call her dad, and but she was so hurt. I mean, all of a sudden, the important years, her growing up years,
he
wasn't
just,
there,
and
he knows how badly he treated her just by being an absentee father, and he knows that his wife was not maternal and not loving. I mean, she did the best she could, but she's really not a maternal woman. And she will be in the next book. He will be in the next book, somewhat, you know. But his presence is there. In fact, I'm working out the fourth book in my mind, and it's very interesting, and it involves Jim somewhat. I'm chuckling as I think about the events that might be a problem, you know, that will cause problems somewhat for Carrie. When I don't want to talk too much about the fourth book because I didn't even write it yet, but I'm working it out in my mind. And but their lives go on, and each book brings out more of different characters. I can't emphasize every single character in every book, but there is much more about Evelyn and Dorothy in the third book. I will say that much. And more of Dylan. Dylan shows up more in the third book because he's transitioning to setting up his own office in New Haven, you know. Not in town, but nearby, close enough so that, you know, they'll be together much more. And that's all I'm saying about the third book. But I love my characters, and to me they're so real, and I am so happy that people love this series. I mean, I hear from so many people how much they love this series. I'm delighted because to me they're real characters and, you know, real people, and I'm really happy about that. So so that's really it for now, you know, about as far as the Red and Gone is concerned. So, did you want to ask anything else?
Yes, I have about two more minutes.
yes.
Nice to know that Carrie and Dylan are coming back. And for those of you that don't know, December 10th, Marilyn's going to join a whole bunch of people, and we're going to talk about the characters, how she chooses her characters, how she names them, how she decides what they do. We might even throw in how you decide the bad guy. And a whole bunch more, whatever Fran comes up with on the spur of the moment. So where can we find out? Yeah, where can we find out more about you and your work? Because everybody that, you know, Hanukkah's coming soon, Christmas is coming, and Thanksgiving is coming, and you know, people like presents when you walk through the door. So you know, books are good. So where can everybody find out about
you? Well, which reminds me, the ebook of Death Overdue is $1.99 now. Well,
you can
find all of my books. Remember, I write the Haunted Library series as Alison Brook. But you can find all of my books on my website, www.marilynlevinson.com. I should say www.marilynlevinson.com. And on my Marilyn Levinson Amazon page, all of my books are there, including this new series. And I'm on Twitter, et cetera. But those two are the main ones. You can get anything there on my new website, which I absolutely love. And I have a newsletter. If you want to get my newsletter,
I was just
going to
say that. I love that
you
newsletter.
Can do that.
I read that.
Oh, thank you.
I don't read very many newsletters, but I read yours because this way I get to know what's happening and when I could email you and say, where's my copy of the next book? Before I did that to D.P. Lyle and Dick Dolphy.
Oh, wow,
They were on the Facebook, and I said, by the way, I've got your new books, and they're coming out in May. And they said, we don't have them. I said, but I do. So they're going to be on in May. But I want to thank you so very much. It's beautiful outside, and I'm looking forward to the panel on December 10th.
So
Everyone
am I.
Have a great day. Have a wonderful day, Marilyn. Everybody have a great day, and bye.
Thanks so much, Fran. Bye.